Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Ausperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., wealth management specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
There's no doubt in my mind that if we had a deal on tariffs, if we had a deal announced, it would be great. We are going to apparently have a deal. We're very close to a deal on Ukraine. That came up today during the cabinet meeting as well. And the Secretary of the Treasury, Scott Bessent, said that we're good to go. As far as we're concerned, we're good to go. And that makes me very, very happy. Matt, do we have that clip, by the way, of Secretary Bessent?
We do. Let me find the number.
I know we have a lot of audio here, but so you can grab that one for me. He was asked about the Ukraine. This is the mineral rights deal that we're working with Ukraine. Trump said today we've paid Ukraine $350 billion. That's how much we've given aid to Ukraine. $350 billion with a B. The number is way higher than I ever would have imagined. Way higher. And, you know, like I said to you, if we were dealing with Kamala Harris's first 100 days in office right now, we would be talking about giving Ukraine more. That's what we'd be talking about, giving Ukraine more money. And you know it as well as I do. We'd be having all these speeches about staying with our friend. Zelensky would probably be speaking to a joint address of Congress. And this is Cut 23. This is the Secretary of the Treasury was asked today at the cabinet meeting about this deal. Take a listen.
Our side is ready to sign. Ukrainians decided last night to make some last minute changes. We're sure that they will reconsider that. And we are ready to sign this afternoon if they are.
Can you talk about those last minute changes? What was removed or put in its place?
Nothing's been removed. It's the same agreement that we agreed to on the weekend. No changes on our side.
No changes on our side. So good. So maybe we'll have this mineral rights deal worked out with Ukraine. And then that will help because obviously China has cut off the minerals and the rare earth magnets. A couple things, you know, I think it's important as we're looking about immigration and the border and everything else. The Kilmar Abrego Garcia, the guy who's in the El Salvadorian prison, that came up today at the cabinet meeting as well and came up last night in the interview with Terry Moran. And the president said that this is the lawyers. They're going to follow the law and they're leaving all this to the lawyers. The case for returning him to the United States of America has gotten a lot more complicated because remember I mentioned to you that we have this agreement in place with Venezuela to house these prisoners. And so this is why, like last week, as I was saying to you that, or the week before last, because I was off last week, but I was saying that it's not just as simple, at least at the time it appeared to be. It may not be as simple as just the president of Venezuela not returning him because we have this agreement with them. So they're a party to this agreement to house our prisoners in exchange for money. We're doing another one with Uzbekistan, too. Same thing. We're going to give them money. They're going to house illegal immigrant criminals in exchange for money. All right? These So Kilmer Abrego Garcia was deported. He was ruled to be deported by a judge. The judge ruled him that he had to go. It was just a matter of not sending him to that country because he made an argument that he was worried about this other gang. Now, you could argue that that argument is moot now because that other gang has been defeated by the new administration in Venezuela. But what would have given the problem that would have occurred for the Trump administration would be if the Supreme Court would have said, since the United States of America is a party to this agreement with Venezuela, then you have to facilitate his return. In which case, then the president would have to make a choice. Am I going to defy the court and then set this precedent? Or am I going to comply? And then we deport him, we bring him home, have him land on U.S. soil, and then we deport him someplace else. Because that's ultimately how you resolve this whole problem. The way you resolve this problem of Kilmer Abrego Garcia, and you don't create any problems with, you know, defying the Supreme Court if they were to rule this way. Because remember, they kicked it back to the lower court. So their ruling about the administration having to facilitate his return is not definitive. And if you're of the mindset of saying, well, the president of Venezuela is not going to return him, well, if they're party to an agreement with the United States, then they would have to because it's part of the agreement that both, you know, it's like entering into any other contract with somebody. So that argument then goes away. The problem, though, is that Kilmer Abrego Garcia is not a party to that agreement, according to Andy McCarthy at National Review. So the United States paid $6 million to detain these prisoners in this El Salvadorian El Salvador. Right. The government covers only Venezuelan aliens whom the government suspects of membership in Tren de Aragua. But that's not Kilmer Abrego Garcia because they have determined that he's a member of MS-13. So this may prove to be a boon for the aliens already deported to El Salvador because on March 15th, the ACLU revamped a lawsuit brought on their behalf in Washington, D.C. The argument that a prisoner remains in the constructive custody of the United States with El Salvador's government as the agent of our government is what's essentially now the issue here. So you see, it's not just a matter of simply saying, hey, it's now he's in El Salvador, so that's that. That's the way it is. The problem is that all of these prisoners are technically, as part of this agreement, in the custody of the United States of America, with that country facilitating their detainment. I know it's kind of complicated legalese, but, you know, that's how these things work. I'm not a lawyer. I don't make the rules, but that's how these things work. So when we sign these agreements, it's like, okay, we're going to pay you to house these people, but we're paying you to house them. We could house them ourselves, but we're going to pay you to do it. We get them out of the country. Well, but they are still technically, as per the agreement, the responsibility of the United States of America. It's an important point to note, getting back to Kilmer Abrego Garcia, because if he were part of this agreement, if he were a party to this, then the Supreme Court could say, well, the United States of America then has to facilitate his return, and then El Salvador has to as well, or the agreement then is null and void. Now, you could then turn around and you could argue, well, it's international relations and the court has no jurisdiction over international relations, which is true. They don't. However, they do have jurisdiction over the kind of agreements that you're talking about when you make them regarding things like housing prisoners and other areas of contract law that are not typical treaties or things like that. At least that would be the thinking going into court. Now, again, I have no idea how the Supreme Court's going to rule on this. They may not. They may not even rule on this. They may turn around and say, well, you know, he's gone, and that's the end of it, and that's, you know, that's that. But since Abrego Garcia is not in the agreement, he's no longer in constructive American custody. Ergo, the U.S. is not in a legal position to direct El Salvador to hand him over to American agents for transfer to the United States. Now, this is where it then does become an international issue. So what Marco Rubio said today at the cabinet meeting, he was asked about this and he said, I'm not going to answer you or a judge because judges have no right to get involved in international affairs. And he's right. They don't. That's different than if you have an agreement with another country and you're dealing with people who are a party to that agreement then the courts can be involved. If it's just a matter of international relations, well, a court cannot order and compel a foreign government to turn over one of its citizens. The Supreme Court has no jurisdiction in El Salvador. And if El Salvador, in the case of Abrego Garcia, is not party to the agreement with the United States government, then the court has absolutely no jurisdiction whatsoever. They can't even fall back on the agreement and say, well, you have this agreement with the country, so we need you to facilitate his return. They can't do that. So it's literally a matter of the Supreme Court does not have the authority to go beyond our border and order another country to do something. They can't. And they can't compel the president to do something when it involves another country. They can't compel the president, for example, to invade a country. They can't tell the president he can't invade a country. They can't order a president to, do, say, strategic airstrikes. They can't order a president to not do strategic airstrikes. They have no authority in that area whatsoever. So they can't order the president to tell another president to send back one of his own citizens. The court has no jurisdiction, and it's not even a gray area there. There's no gray area. Now, with regards to the agreement, however, anyone subject to that agreement is therefore subject to review by the court because the United States of America has a fiduciary responsibility, basically, to ensure that those prisoners are they're fed, they're not being abused, all those other things. We can't enter into an agreement with another country unless we can ensure all those things. That's just how it works. Now, for example, I mean, like Stacey Garrity, who's the treasurer of Pennsylvania, we've had her on the show multiple times. She was known for her role in Iraq of ensuring that the human rights of those prisoners were preserved. And she had a flawless record of that. The United States of America has a duty to make sure that the prisoners are taken care of, whether they're in our custody or we reach an agreement with another country to house prisoners that would normally be in our custody. Now, again, this is different from deporting somebody. If you deport somebody and send them back to their country, that's different. That's all. Then we've severed the ties and that's that. That's completely different. Much different scenario. In that scenario, you got some Italian mobster. They used to do this back in the day when they actually went after the mafia, you know? You'd arrest this guy and you'd prove that he was the head of the Gambino family, right? And then now you're going to deport him back to Italy. So you put him on a plane or a boat. You send him back to the old country. He gets off the boat. He gets off the plane. The United States of America is done. All they had to do was facilitate his return and keep him safe on the ride. And then that's it. If he walks down the street and gets shot by a rival mafia family, not that there's any such thing as the mafia because it doesn't exist, allegedly, then that's not the United States' problem. Guy's been deported. Goodbye. Okay? When you're housing criminals, though, and you're paying another country to house those criminals, then the United States does have responsibility for those prisoners. Again, I know this is kind of like complicated legalese stuff here, but the reason why I'm saying all this is that the Abrego Garcia case is not over. But now that we know that he's not a party to that agreement, there's literally nothing the courts can do. The courts cannot compel the president to ask the head of state of another country to return one of its own citizens. The court can't compel the head of another country to send one of its citizens to the United States of America. They can't do any of these things. So, hey, by the way, DeSantis, look on Fox News right now.
Oh, yeah. He was sitting right next to us.
We were sitting right next to him the entire time. I didn't even realize that was him.
I didn't know. I didn't realize it either. Now I feel stupid.
He was a very, very nice guy. Winston Marshall. Very nice guy. Had a nice chat with him. Lovely accent. But just never put the two and two together that he was the banjoist from Mumford & Sons.
Nope. No idea. He was the one that had the debate with Nancy Pelosi at Oxford University, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He chopped her up pretty good.
Yeah, he did great. But we were sitting there next to him the whole time. Could have done an interview with him instead. Will Cain's got him. Well done, DeSantis.
I'm not a Mumford and Sons like fanboy. I didn't recognize him.
The thing is, I love Mumford and Sons. I just never put two and two together. So
yeah, now I feel stupid now.
You should feel stupid.
He sat in there all day with us. We were the last two groups to leave.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I went down to see, they didn't even let him go see the Eagles.
No, he sat in there with me.
He sat in there with you, the loser room, watching it from the window.
I had a great
view. You didn't get to go down on the south lawn.
I have to say, I had a pretty great view from the window.
I'm just saying. So here's Rubio answering the question today at the cabinet meeting regarding Abrego Garcia. Take a listen.
Secretary Rubio, can I ask you a question? You brought up El Salvador in your remarks. Have you been in touch with El Salvador about returning Abrego Garcia as a formal request from this administration to me?
Well, I would never tell you that. And you know who else I'll never tell? A judge. Because the conduct of our foreign policy belongs to the President of the United States and the executive branch, not some judge. So we will conduct foreign policy appropriately if we need to. But I'll never discuss it. And no one will ever make us discuss it because that's how foreign policy works.
And that's it. And that's the end of it. He's been deported to his country. And that's it. He's not party to an agreement that the United States of America has with El Salvador. Therefore, the court has no jurisdiction whatsoever. And secondly, on top of that, since he's been deported and he's in his country right now, and he does not have the ability to come back to the United States of America, and the court can't force the president to engage in international affairs in any way, shape, or form, that's the end of it. So Abrego Garcia is going to be there, and he's going to be there, and that's the end of the story. So there you go. Now, it got a little tense yesterday in the interview with Terry Moran regarding him and his MS-13 tattoos. And I got a tweet from Kerry. She didn't like how Trump answered this question. She was mad at me for not covering it yet. And all I said was, well, the show's not over yet. But let me play for you the exchange, and then you can make the determination for yourself of what you think regarding how the president handled this with Terry Moran yesterday at the White House. And this is the big story of the hour brought to you by our buddy, Dr. Mike Vanaria, VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile. V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VanariaDental.com. Here's the president talking about how he had MS-13 on his knuckles, cut number 8.
He wasn't a member of a gang. And then they looked, and right, on his knuckles, he had MS-13. Right.
There's a dispute
over
that.
Wait a minute. He had MS-13 on his knuckles tattoo.
Oh, he had some tattoos that are interpreted that way. But let's move on.
Wait a minute. Terry.
He did not have the letter MS-13.
It says MS-13.
That was Photoshop.
That was Photoshop. Terry, you can't do that. Hey, they're giving you the big break of a lifetime. You know, you're doing the interview. I picked you because, frankly, I never heard of you, but that's okay. I picked you, Terry. But you're not being very nice. He had MS-13 tattooed.
We'll agree to disagree. I want to move on to something else.
Terry, do you want me to show you the picture?
I saw the picture.
Think it was Photoshop?
Well, here we go.
Don't Photoshop it. Go look at his hand. He had MS-13.
He did have tattoos that can be interpreted that way. I'm not an expert on them. I want to turn to Ukraine, sir.
Terry, I want to get to Ukraine. No. He had MS, as clear as you can be, not interpreted. This is why no longer believe the news, because it's fake news.
When he was photographed in El Salvador, they aren't there. But let's just go. They aren't there when he's in El Salvador.
They're there now, right?
No,
but they're
in your picture.
Terry.
Ukraine, sir.
He's got MS-13 on his knuckles.
All right.
Okay.
Right, well, we'll take a look.
You do such a disservice.
We'll take a look at that, sir.
Why don't you just say it? Yes, he does, and go on to something else.
It's contested.
What I don't understand is why Terry Moran keeps trying to get. If he's so sure of this fact, then why is he not pushing back? That's what I don't get about that whole exchange. If he's convinced that the knuckles were photoshopped and the president is not being honest, why is he so quick to try to get off the topic? I don't get that. I listened to that exchange, and that's all I could think of. I was like, all right, if you're saying the president's lying, he's saying he's not. You're saying it's Photoshop. The president's saying it's not. I'm very interested right now in what the truth is. I think anybody listening to that exchange would probably like to know. But it certainly seems like you were ready to. I mean, he did. He threw in the towel, and he's like, all right, well, forget it. Let's move on to Ukraine. And Trump's like, no. Those were real. Those were real tattoos. Well, if they weren't, why doesn't Terry Moran just sit there and keep pushing back? Is what I don't get. And the answer to that, in case you're wondering, is because he doesn't want to not get asked back. He doesn't want to not get asked back to the White House. That's the reality. That's the truth. He could have. I mean, he could have kept going and going about that. And he could have pulled up pictures and said, well, let's look at this right now. Let's do this right now. Let's pull up the pictures and let's take a look and let's, and he could have, but he didn't. And I as I listened to that exchange this morning, I thought to myself, it's so obvious how these guys are more concerned about access to Trump for their ratings purposes than anything else. And so now you've got a new situation happening. Whereas in the past, you have the media that covered for Joe Biden. Now you have a media that is so desperate to get around Trump that they won't keep going. They'll just drop it because it's better for his career to get asked back in 2 years to do another exclusive with Trump. And he doesn't want to make him mad. And that's the reason because the media is a business. It is a business, period. And these guys are all about making money and all about ratings. And that's why you have independent media outlets and journalists out there. Like, I mean, there would have been a point in this country where a journalist would have said, this may be I may get fired for this, or this may be my last interview or whatever, but I'm not leaving here until this subject is definitively solved. And there might have been a time when the president said, get out of my office, and walked up and left. But he is so quick to move on to Ukraine. Now, I don't know whether or not they were photoshopped or not. I have no idea. But isn't that the point of a journalist, which is to go in there and then you question people in power and you try to get the answers to things and you try to, and he was just ready to, let's just let it go. Let's just move on to Ukraine. Let it go. It was strange. It was a strange moment to me because you could have said, well, Mr. President, let's pull it up on the phone and take a look. Let's pull this up. Here's from the prison. And then you could have. But he knows that would have meant there's no more Terry Moran. And it's too valuable for him to have that kind of access, which is fine. Look, I get it. I'm not a journalist, right? So if I get the chance to interview Trump, I'm not going to be throwing hardball questions at the guy. I'm going to talk to him. But I'm not a journalist. I'm not pretending to be a journalist. I'm a commentator. I give my opinion. And I give you my thoughts on things, and my thoughts and comments on things are usually accurate, almost always right. Journalists, though, have a different job. Their job is to get to the truth of a story. Their job is to chase down a story. And when with Joe Biden, we watch as the media covered up, not fail to cover. Language matters here. Words matter. They didn't fail to cover Joe Biden's cognitive decline. They covered up Joe Biden's cognitive decline. Now you have journalists that should also be chasing the story on things like this, but now they're afraid that they won't get the access and their career would be harmed by that, versus you have a Frost-Nixon situation where it's like, you know what, all the cards on the table here and that's it. And if this is my last interview, then so be it. And I think that says a lot about the state of journalism today. I really do. I was listening to Bill Murray was on Joe Rogan's podcast, and when I was driving to D.C., I was listening to it because I'm a huge fan of Bill Murray's acting, and they had a really interesting conversation about a lot of different things. But he mentioned that interview that David Frost did with Richard Nixon, and they made a movie about it. And I remember watching that movie and thinking that was a very interesting point because he had just beat the crap out of Bob Woodward, who he said lied about his friend, John Belushi. And he said, you know, if Bob Woodward lied so badly about my friend John Belushi, then Nixon was framed. Nixon was set up. Bob Woodward has no credibility because he lied so badly about my friend John Belushi, talking to people that didn't really know him and everything. But he brings up the Frost-Nixon interview and how, you know, David Frost was coming at Nixon like really, really hard and everything like that. For the crowded media space that we're in right now with so many different outlets and so many different voices and so many different podcasters and hosts and a guy from Mumford & Sons who was sitting right next to me at the White House and I didn't even know who he was, and we should have, obviously. But for him to not keep going because he's afraid of what it will do to his career to not keep going, I think says a lot. I really do. I do. I think it says a lot. And so at that moment, he surrendered and chose to then live to fight another day, I guess you'd say. And I think you're going to see a lot of that happen as time goes on, because a one-on-one interview with President Trump is just that valuable. It's just that valuable of currency. So, you know, I mean, I don't know what else to tell you other than it's the same situation with Biden, right? They chose to actively cover up Biden's cognitive decline because they were so afraid of Trump. And the hostility that they have to Trump, they do for their ratings. And I just have to wonder if Terry Moran had in that moment kept badgering, pulling up images on his phone, would it have served him better? Like in that moment, would that have served him better in his career versus saying, let's just talk about Ukraine? I would have. I mean, if it were me and I was sitting there and it was a president I didn't like, I would have gone for it. I would have gone for the jugular. I would have gone all in. I would have put out my look at the pictures. Look at this. You know what I'm saying? Like if it had been me and I was sitting there with Biden, I would have been like, what's 2 + 2? It's 4. Look at my phone. It's 4. I just in thinking of that moment in that exchange, I don't get it. Like, I just don't get what was going through his mind at that moment, other than I guess he was thinking I'd rather come back and do another sit down interview with him. But, you know, you may not get another chance. So very strange. I just thought it was strange. I really did. I thought it was a strange, strange moment. And if your job is to get to the truth, to get to the answer, you didn't do that, which kind of proves the point, I think, that we all think about the media these days, which is these guys are really just, they're there to get paid a lot of money to be on TV and serve an audience. They're not really there to pursue anything. And it's been like that for years. It really has. It's been like that for years. I mean, and they do it with both parties. They really do. I mean, nothing comes close to the cover-up of Joe Biden. That was or the cover-up of the Hunter Biden laptop, because those were instances where you had the media in this country actively working to facilitate a cover-up of something. And there should be investigations and prosecutions and everything like that. But there was no curiosity about the Hunter Biden laptop. They just wanted to protect Joe Biden. There was no curiosity about Biden's cognitive decline. They just wanted to protect Joe Biden. It's a strange time, but you can understand why the trust in media is so low. It's just, it's at the bottom of your shoe. Like the scum that's on the, whatever crap that's on your shoe when you walk through a movie theater or something like that, that has higher trust and credibility than the media these days. And I respect people who drop the veneer and they're like, I'm not a journalist. I'm an opinion maker. I give my opinions. Fine. I respect people who can at least say that. What I have a problem with are people that pretend to be a journalist, like George Stephanopoulos, another great example. He's I call him the unbiased, I joke and say he's the unbiased journalist. I'm very curious what the lesser Cuomo is going to do tonight with Trump during his interview on News Nation, because I wonder if the lesser Cuomo is going to try to do a kill shot on Trump. You know, but obviously it's a metaphor, but I wonder if he's going to try to be really nice to him. Like what? It's a big deal for Chris Cuomo and for News Nation that they got a sit down interview with the president. It's a big deal. So I'm curious what that's going to look like and what that's going to be like. Anyway, let's take a break. The president's probably going to speak from the White House in a few minutes, and you can we'll bring that to you live. But I want to tell you about Emmons Roofing and Siding. They're great people, great friends. Emmons will solve the problems that you have with your roof, your windows, doors, and they're going to make your house look better in the process. And you're going to get 10% off, a 10% off inflation relief discount just for you, thanks to Emmons Roofing and Siding. Now, they serve our whole region, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, and the Jersey Shore. And the best part about Emmons is that Matt and Stephanie know that they got to make sure the job is done right. They got to make sure it's done on time. They got to make sure it's done on budget. That's what they got to do. And they're going to make sure they do it. They'll never tell you you need a new roof if you don't, but if you do, you're going to get a lifetime warranty with the Owens Corning Shingle, the best in the business roof, by far, the best. And you're going to have beautiful new Anderson windows if you want to get those replaced, the doors. We've used Emmons over 10 years in 2 different houses. And so you should definitely reach out to them today by going to emmonsroofing.com. And when they remodeled the bathroom in her old house, Bridget was thrilled. And like I've said to you before, happy wife, happy life. EmmonsRoofing.com.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down. we've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available if at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
We are cooking with gasoline today. We got a lot going on, and the president's supposed to speak at the White House just a few moments from now. I want to tell you about Politics and Pints, because we are going to be together on stage next week. Politics and Pints is going to be a great time, a lot of fun. I want you to be there. It's going to be on Tuesday, May 6th at the in Phoenixville at the Colonial Theater. And then we're going to do before that at the Great American Pub. We're going to be live with the show. So all that's happening next Tuesday, May 6th. All you got to do is go to 1210WPHG.com today, 1210WPHG.com, and get your tickets for our Politics and Pints. It's Nick, it's Dom, Dawn, me, all together talking about the first 100 days and you and your questions. And we'll have a lot of fun. It'll be a great, great time. So please do that today. Now, I wanted to mention to you as the cabinet meeting today, Bobby Kennedy, he's really trying to make America healthy again. Now, I did a little research into these bans on these dyes. They're not actually banning them, which is good because I don't like bans. I really don't. What they've done, which I think is really good, is they've worked with the food companies to phase out these dyes. And it's smart for the food companies, too. First of all, I don't like the idea, and I'm certainly not going to be a hypocrite. I've told you for years, I don't like bans on anything. So when Gavin Newsom years ago was banning Skittles because they had red dye, whatever, I argued with people about that. I'm like, no, I don't want bans. I want consumers to know what's in a package, and then they can make a decision for themselves. They can decide for themselves whether or not they want to eat it or not. Right? That's the way I like to see that. You can decide for yourself. But anyway, what they've done is they've worked with the food companies to take these things out. Now, it's not popular to have red dye 5 and yellow 40 and all this other stuff. Parents don't want it. And for a lot of parents, they don't have a choice because it's, you know, many times it's an economics issue. But our kids are also as healthy as you try to make them. The kids are also having access to all kinds of garbage that they should not have access to. So, you know, there's that too. There's that aspect of it as well. You could do the best job ever, but you go to a birthday party, a kid's got a birthday party, he's eating Doritos and all kinds of other things. He's getting all the stuff you're trying to protect him with. So working with the food companies to phase out these dyes is great. Now, I like that better than a ban by the FDA, because I've always said if we're going to ban something, Congress needs to do it, not an executive agency. And I'm certainly not going to change my tune just because my guy's in the White House. I still feel very strongly about that. So working with Big Food and having them agree to phase out these dyes over the course of time and then find other ways that they can preserve the color of foods, it's good. It's what people want. They want America to be healthy. They want their kids to have access to healthy food. Everybody wins, and Kennedy's fulfilling his promise. So this is from the cabinet meeting today, the Secretary of Health and Human Services. It's cut number 26. This is part one of two. Take a listen.
Mr. President, thank you for your extraordinary leadership. Over the past 100 days, we are already making America healthy again. We announced last week the ban on the 9 petroleum-based synthetic dyes, food dyes. Within 2 years, within 2 months, we're going to ban the worst 2 of them. I am working with Secretary Rollins on dietary guidelines, the dietary guidelines that the President Biden's administration gave us, 453 pages. They're basically unreadable. And they are the product of the same kind of politicized science that drove Fruit Loops to the top of the food pyramid. And we're going to do real science, gold standard science. We're going to develop we have till December to do it, but we are working very, very fast together. We're going to get it done by the end of the summer in time to drive change, major dramatic changes in the school foods, the school lunch programs over the next school year. I'm working also with Secretary Rollins on the SNAP program and to get sodas and and candy off of the food stamp program. 10% of food stamps go to SNAP. And I want to thank you for your courage. You are a business-friendly president, probably the most business-friendly in our history, but you're also willing to stand up to very, very powerful businesses, and you've shown that again and again. Secretary Rollins had the soda industry come in and knock on her door very much, very loudly, and they said to her, well, the SNAP program is not supposed to be about nutrition. She pointed out to them that there is no nutrition in a soda. And they said, well, it's not supposed to be about nutrition. And she said to them, the name of the program is Supplemental Nutrition Assistance. So it is about nutrition. And we shouldn't, you know.
And the other part of it, too, is that we have this chronic disease and we got a lot of chubby kids out there. We do. We got a lot of chubby kids. But the larger part of the Make America Healthy Again, the MAHA movement, is that you've got suburban moms who voted for Trump. They may not have voted for him in 2020. They voted for him this time around because of Kennedy and because of the fact that they want healthy food for their kids. And there a lot of these poor people who are on food stamps or the SNAP program or whatever. I've mentioned this to you before. A lot of them live in areas where they literally can only get garbage because they're food deserts. You look at parts of Philadelphia, Camden, other places like that, they're food deserts. So you don't even have access to healthy food. You don't even have access to fresh and healthy food. And that's the other problem. So if you eliminate the ability of the SNAP benefits to be used for that, like you can't use SNAP now. There's already restrictions on it. So you can't use it to buy alcohol and cigarettes and things like that. If you eliminate it on that and you've got a consumer base in that area, one of two things happens. Either that store decides it's going to start stocking healthier stuff and not just garbage, or the people then have to try to find a way to get access to the stuff they can use with their SNAP benefits. My sense of it is that typically the market would react in a way where if you've got a convenience store and a lot of the people in that area use SNAP benefits and they can't buy a lot of the healthy crap that you're stocking the shelves with, you're going to stock the shelves with better stuff. And that's because now you've got a marketplace there with people coming with these prepaid debit cards, and you don't want to lose that money. You don't want to lose that. So then what happens is instead of having 9 rows of Cheetos, you have 1 row of Cheetos, and then you also offer healthy stuff. You actually have fresh fruit. You offer some fresh produce. And since it's government money that's being used here to pay for this stuff, you've got every incentive in the world, if you're the owner of that bodega, to make sure that people can come there and use their benefit cards. You've got every incentive in the world. You don't want them jumping on a bus and having to take it to a Whole Foods or a Giant or whatever. You don't want that. You want to be able to serve them in that community. So that's what I think will ultimately be the result of that and what would happen. Now, look, as far as you say, well, the government should be telling them what they can or can't have with those SNAP benefits. But when you're getting government money, the government imposes all kinds of rules on that money. You know, if you're getting government money for whatever it is, there's rules you have to follow, whether it's you're getting a government loan, you're getting a government backed mortgage, you're getting a government backed whatever. There's all kinds of rules. So let's not pretend like there isn't. You know, if you're also on a school lunch program, which is being subsidized by taxpayer dollars, it should also come with some common sense, obviously. But the school lunch thing, that's a whole other issue. Because again, you send your kids to school, you pack them a healthy lunch, you hope for the best. They get there and it's like a drug trade. These kids are trading food. You know, they're trading for all kinds of stuff. And that's what they do. But I'll come back. I'll play the second part of what the Secretary of Health and Human Services said today, Bobby Kennedy. And again, we're not banning the food dyes. They're working with the food companies to phase them out. Good. I like that. I don't like bans. That's the way to do it. So I'm very, very happy to hear that. Garden State Earthworks, they're going to help you with the water problems in your yard. You know, spring is great. It rains and we get beautiful flowers and the trees bloom and everything and all that's wonderful. But if you've got water problems in your yard, you better make sure you reach out to Garden State Earthworks today, because Garden State Earthworks will drain that water away from your house once and for all for good. That's what they do. They're the best. They really are. They're the best at what they do. Lou Vargo, the president, he's my buddy. I first met him in our old house because we had a wet basement. And then with this new house, we had a wet backyard, soggy backyard. You don't want that because then what happens is it breeds mosquitoes. You have all kinds of problems. It could cause damage to your pool liner. It could cause damage to your foundation, ruin your basement. But Garden City Earthworks will drain that water away. Here's their number. Easy to remember. 856-848-4444. 856-848-4444. Or go to GardenStateEarthworks.com. GardenStateEarthworks.com. And you'll see just how outstanding they are and upstanding they are. GardenStateEarthworks.com. Continuing along here on the show, a busy, busy show. I still got to get into, as we talk about Trump's first 100 days, Daniel Turner is going to join us a little bit later in the show today. We'll talk about all that we're doing on deregulation of energy. This makes me very, very happy. I love this. I really do. As I've said, I want some clarity on tariffs. I want some deals to be announced. I want some agreements to happen. And the prong here of you got to get deals done. You have to. And you got to cut these regulations, which they're doing. And then you got to get the Trump tax cuts permanent. These things have to happen. But I'll play what Lee Zeldin said today, what they're doing at the EPA. And it's great. It's great stuff. They're really undoing so much of the damage that was done by executive fiat. And the executive action to undo executive action that has to be done, this process that has to be done here, it's insane. How many rules were promulgated? And they have to pass the RAINS Act. They need to pass the RAINS Act because the RAINS Act is fantastic. And it gives Congress the ability to rein in the executive branch when the executive branch is passing rules and passing all kinds of other things. We got to do that. This is what Secretary Kennedy said as he gave remarks at the president's cabinet meeting, what they're doing to make America healthy again. Again, I want to remind you, he says a ban. It's not a ban. They worked with the food companies to take out these petroleum-based synthetic dyes, which is good. I like that. You work with the businesses, work with them, and that's better than some, you know, FDA ban that would have to be promulgated in the public register and a comment period, and in my opinion, would be something that needs to be done by Congress. But there's nothing wrong, and we should. I mean, the government should work with these companies and give them incentives. And it's in their own best interest, by the way, to get this crap out of the food supply. It really is. It's in their best interest to do so. Here's cut 27.
It's existential and it's not sustainable. We have, I visited Arizona, West Virginia, Utah, and Indiana in the last 2 weeks, who have all applied for SNAP waivers. We're encouraging, thanks to Brooke Rollins' leadership, all the states to apply for those waivers. I also visited Utah, which is the first state to ban supplemental fluoride. Florida yesterday passed a bill to ban supplemental fluoride. I'm confident Governor DeSantis is going to sign that. We are working, Lee Zeldin and I are working together to change the federal fluoride regulations, to change the recommendations, and we're looking at the science now. I want to point out that in August, the National Toxicity Program, which was an arm of the NIH, did a meta-review of all the science on fluoride and found that there's a direct inverse correlation between fluoride exposure and lowered IQ in children. So the more you get, the stupider you are. And we need smart kids in this country, and we need healthy kids. And thank you for your leadership. We're going to get there. We're reviewing the GRAS standards now to get, we're revamping them to get 10,000 ingredients that are in our foods. The Europeans only have 400 ingredients. We have 10,000. There are chemicals we know nothing about. And we are going to stop that process, and then we're going to go back and look at these chemicals and make the companies either get rid of them or to label them. We've launched Operation Stork Speed, and we're going full speed ahead to make sure that we have good, high-quality milk for children. We have launched the autism study at your direction. By September, we'll have some of the first answers. Within 6 months of that, we will have definitive answers, not only for autism, but for the etiology of a whole range of autoimmune diseases that have become epidemic in our children. We have ended HHS as the role as the vector the principal vector in this country for child trafficking. And during the Biden administration, HHS became a collaborator in child trafficking and for sex and for slavery. And we have ended that, and we're very aggressively going out and trying to find these children, the 300,000 children that were lost by the Biden administration. We have ended funding for gender mutilation surgeries and other kind of gender dysphoria practices. And thanks to Elon, we have saved $67 billion at our agency without compromising any of our critical programs. Mr. President, I want to thank you for your vision, for your leadership, for giving me the 100 busiest days of my life, and most exciting and most rewarding. And there's over the next 100 days, we're going to do much, much more.
That's great. Thank you very much.
All right, let me jump out of this, and we'll take a quick break, quick turnaround. The president's speaking. And we'll get to that as we get into our hour, half hour of Nonstop Talk. So don't go away.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.